Hello, everybody. Welcome to FinTech Law, NUS FinTech Labs podcast. Today, I'm going to be your moderator, Nicholas Garcia, and I have two excellent guests. One are Tae Han, the organizer of NUS FinTech Society's recent blockbuster hackathon, and we have Han Wai from the sponsoring company ELF, A-E-L-F, the business development associate from to discuss the opportunities from the industry and student perspective of growing the fintech ecosystem and growing our careers within this burgeoning area. To start off, I would like to turn to each of our guests, starting with Tae Han to give a brief introduction of themselves.
Hi everyone, I'm Tae Han. I'm NUS Fintech Society's Internal Affairs Director. So just a very short introduction of Fintech Society. We are about 200 men strong, and we have a total of four different tracks. The first one being the quant department, second one being machine learning, blockchain, and software department. We regularly engage in different projects within each of the tracks and are able to, we try to kind of develop projects over the semesters that we have in NUS. At the same time, me and my team were also very fortunate to have organized NUS FinTech Summit 2024 with a total of about 200 plus hackathon participants as well as 12 sponsoring companies. And we're very happy that it was a success, everything went well, and we were able to engage both our students as well as our judges very accordingly.
Thank you so much. And Han Wai, one of the leading sponsors of this FinTech Hackathon Summit that just occurred.
Hi, thanks for having me. My name is Han Wai. I'm part of the business development team at ELF. So a short introduction of ELF. ELF is a layer one blockchain that is built on the .NET framework, and its main smart contract language is C#. So how we intend to scale our blockchain ecosystem is via sidechain or multi-chain technology.
I would like to start off delving into our panel discussion and aiming for our comprehensive dialogue. Starting off with Tae Han, can you share from your perspective as a student in the organizing committee, and please discuss some of the challenges that your team has faced and what are the actions that you've taken to overcome these hurdles?
Yeah, so for NUS FinTech Society, it's really a chicken and egg problem for us. So usually the number of sponsors that we have will be very dependent on the number of participants that we could garner in for the hackathon. At the same time, the number of participants that we had was really dependent on the quality as well as the number of sponsors that we actually had. And so it required concerted effort from the external department as well as the internal department to kind of get these two moving parts together. And because it was so complex in a sense where we had to engage external parties as well as try to rile up the NUS crowd, it was very challenging, I would say, to kind of get everyone together within the same platform. And so that was the first challenge that we experienced as a student organizing community. On the topic of moving parts, we also had a few sections that we had to take care of, which were the judges, the panelists, the students, as well as our teachers from NUS FinTech Society. And so we had to be able to handle all of this during the competition, during the workshops that we had. And so it required a lot of intentionality in the way we plan, as well as we tried to keep the events short and sweet as well as smooth, and that required a lot of back-end planning. And so these were the two main challenges that we feel we faced during this year's FinTech Summit. And at the same time, the alumnus that we had previously also gave us a very nice boost in a sense where we were able to engage companies much easier because of our prior connections with them. And so these were certain ways where we got around trying to organize a successful hackathon.
Thank you. And ELF with Han Wai, we're one of the biggest sponsors for this event, and I think we would be really excited to hear Han Wai give a bit of description of how they were thinking about approaching this student-led group to help the fintech ecosystem in Singapore.
I would definitely agree with what Tae Han said. There is a lot of thought process that goes into this hackathon, and in fact, this is one of the most well-thought-of hackathon that from a university layer that we have participate in. I think the challenge or the moving parts that we have in regards to any university hackathon is have to again go back to basics. I think as new students come into the university ecosystem, their understanding, or in fact any new person that comes into the blockchain ecosystem, their understanding might, in a way, be shaped by media or be shaped by what they previously heard, which may or may not be accurate in that sense, right? In the media, we're always hearing about, oh, there is a certain hack, there is a certain price action going on. But in its core essence, blockchain is not just about, you know, being hacked. It's not just about price action going up and down, right? At its core action, blockchain is a fundamental infrastructure, technical infrastructure, that proves to enforce or facilitate digital trust. On top of that, if you layer in tokenization, that's where things get a bit more complicated and interesting at the same time. That's where it leads to other things, secondary or tertiary things that you hear on the news. Going back to to the moving parts of this hackathon, one of the key challenges for us, for as a blockchain ecosystem to come into a university hackathon, is to educate and go back to the basics. So that's always the challenge, number one. Number two is that we need to kind of build up to our problem statement. So this year, our problem statement is mainly on how we can enable enterprise to use blockchain solutions to build everyday applications. With that, we need to kind of show the students what has already been done in the industry, and from there, inspire them to come up with ideas of their own. So that's the challenge we always have when it comes to, you know, entering into a university to run hackathons and run, I would say, competitions in such a fresh and vibrant ecosystem.
Thank you, Han Wai, for your third response. I think some of the things you mentioned are the fact that people might have the misconceptions or very shallow understanding based on their exposure to the media, and that trying to get people up to speed with the understanding of the fundamental technology, as well as looking forward to the ability to innovate and create new ideas that haven't been done before, is a key aspect that you have discussed and looking for, towards the mentorship. I think on this theme of the importance of mentorship and potentially funding as well, I'll turn it to Tae-Han. We heard a little bit from Han Wai about the mentorship kind of challenges, or at least efforts that were undertaken from the industry point of view. From the student point of view, what is your understanding of the needs or the benefits or the intricacies of receiving this kind of mentorship and as well funding provided by these sponsoring companies to help engage in your own educational growth, or even if you see some startups, fintech startups, progressing over time, the benefits of this kind of mentorship and sponsorship?
So for our part, I think the idea of intentionality is very important. So we had consultation sessions where ELF's developers came down and had consultation sessions together with our hackathon participants. And I thought that was a very good idea, because they could meet physically in FinTech Lab and they could talk about the feasibility of their coding strategies as well as their Solidity code. And then members of the team will usually also ask about how do I do this better. And because during the foundational levels of university, we usually are not taught on, for example, concepts of Solidity, or we are not taught of smart contract writing. And this serves as a very apt opportunity for our students to be able to engage industry leaders and in the blockchain space, and potentially be able to learn first-hand information straight from the industry. And I thought that would be an eye-opener especially for budding students, year one and year twos, which are actually the bulk of the students in NUS FinTech Summit this year. So that was a really great point in terms of mentorships. At the same time, we also had a bunch of workshops, which kind of lowered the barriers to entry for students to actually join. And also, ELF also organized a quite a big workshop for the participating hackathon members, which I thought was a very good way to level all the students up before they proceeded with the hackathon. The intricacies behind the way that it was planned was something that was allowed or primed for understanding, as well as it primed for further learning in the topic. In the perspective of sponsorships, it really allows, because the sponsorships will in turn be used as cash money, so as cash prizes for our hackathon participants. And so, because there is this monetary incentive, it really primes that intrinsic motivation, the starting, it kindles the flame for students to be able to start researching about topics. At the same time, in the problem statements provided by our companies, they will also draw different lingos, different keywords for students to actually search and deep dive on those topics, and in turn be able to be interested or kind of find something that you enjoy about the fintech space, either in all the four tracks that we had during this fintech summit.
So that's really interesting. Allow me to jump in on that. So at ELF, we do acknowledge and realize some of these challenges that Tehan mentioned as well. Right. So, for example, the learning of a new programming language, Solidity, number one. Number two is the lingo that the blockchain or Web3 community adopts. Right. So, we do acknowledge that these are kind of barriers of entry for, I would say, a layman or someone not within the Web3 or blockchain industry to enter. Right. And at ELF, we try to lower that. So number one, instead of using Solidity, we are actually using a quite well-established programming language called C#. Yeah, that's number one. So that seeks to lower the barrier entry for, I would say, already established developers to come into our ecosystem. That's number one. Number two is the problem statement that we actually issue is actually on how we can onboard enterprise to create everyday applications using blockchain technology. So that is a very interesting problem statement in itself. The sole reason is that you are now required to learn the Web3 terminologies, the technology and everything. And then you need to go back to basic and kind of break down all these terminologies in a way that the everyday users will be able to understand you clearly. That itself is one of the main challenge in the entire Web3 and blockchain industry altogether.
Yeah, thank you guys for your great feedback on this. To recap, I think we had a little bit of a discussion about how the mentorship helped students, especially both understand how to code, and the mentors from ELF helped introduce a language such as C# that helps established programmers get up to speed more quickly. And as well, the sponsorship was really providing a big incentive to get a large number of students interested who might not have had exposure to this perspective before. I want to turn to ELF really quickly and get some of your, dig in a little bit to perhaps your company's experience of trying to craft the perfect problem statements, perhaps what seems like it was not good enough to make the cut, or what was, how did you think about scoping? What are the different options that perhaps were the second best runner-up problem statements that you didn't quite set up for the students, and how your selection of the problem statements might help influence the overall development of the fintech ecosystem if some of these products end up taking off?
I think that's a great question. Thank you for that. For this particular, or rather for most problem statements that ELF issues, it always goes back to our vision. So at ELF, our vision is the real adoption of Web3 technology. Adoption of Web3 technology by real users. And that is quite a mouthful. So allow me to break that down. For any kind of adoption to happen, you really need two groups of, in this case, three groups of people. Number one, you need enterprise to build applications. So these applications actually provide value to the second group of users, which is the everyday users. Right? Everyday users, if they find value in the application, they'll use it every day, and with that, get mass adoption. The third group of users would then be the developers who build these applications for the enterprise. So a classic example would be, for example, the Apple ecosystem. Right? You need enterprises to kind of create applications that give value to the users, and from there, users would in turn vote, quote-unquote vote, whether this app is valuable to them or not, be it through time, be it through money, or be it through other means of resources. And that funnels back all the way to the developers who create the app in the first place.
I think this understanding of trying to think of the trilemma of enterprise, everyday users, and developers, and having these three audiences in mind when you're crafting your problem statement is definitely something that perhaps future sponsors or future people all around the world who are trying to help build this ecosystem can hold in mind when they're trying to craft the perfect problem statement. So thank you so much for your guys' experience on this for our next statement, I would like to again start with Elf actually and ask, in your guys' view, how do hackathons or other innovation-focused events have you seen drive advancement and entrepreneurship in general in this fintech ecosystem?
So the whole point of a hackathon is to really explore ideas from a fresh perspective. And that's what kind of the industry is facing, right? Because we have been going at this problem with our set lenses for a while now. And sometimes that is what that makes progress a bit, you know, stagnant in that sense. And working with universities is the best way, I would say, to bridge the gap between academia and industry. And someone from the industry, we get fresh perspective from users. They, in a way, challenge us on our current way of doing things. Mm-hmm. And that's value there, right? And on top of that, sometimes it requires someone like that to shake up the industry, to push a certain idea forward. And that's value to us as a underlying blockchain ecosystem. So to share an example, we actually are working with Chain Champs, which is the winner of our hackathon track, to realize their hackathon idea and help them go to market on that. Yeah, so that's value for us. On the flip side, what's the value for students and what's the value to universities, right? Or education institutions. On the student side of things, they get industry knowledge and they get exposure into what is happening in the real world. And that's something that academia can provide to a certain extent, but to really, for them to get the full exposure, they will need to jump into the industry proper. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you so much, Han Wai. So I think just to kind of, again, summarize, some of the main points here were that allowing the students to kind of explore these blue ocean projects might help open up some opportunities that perhaps people who have already been working in the industry haven't had the time or a little bit too focused within their current niche to currently explore. So there's some ability for students to ideate new ideas. And also, as you said, though, perhaps we shouldn't be looking for students per se to always have the next innovation up. Of course, we do have certain, you know, perhaps the winners of these hackathons might be the ones who might actually carry forward their ideas to create some new opportunities, both creating value for the sponsoring companies or for continuing on to the overall ecosystem, but also allowing students to get this hands-on experience and jump in eventually with both feet into the industry, creating a talent pipeline that helps fuel the pool of creativity overall is probably something that we can hope is a benefit from these kinds of innovations. Turning to our student representative, Tehan, a little bit on this subject, from your point of view, some of the points that we brought up previously in this discussion was, first of all, educating students on is actually going on in the deep, we might say, behind the headlines in the ecosystem. We talked a little bit about the challenges or the efforts that the mentors have made to make sure that you guys are brought up to speed and potentially don't maybe recreate the wheel of things that have already been done before, but also think of new projects. From your point of view, from the student side, did you feel like it was very difficult for students to find kind of new novel ideas that had not been done before? Was there a lot of struggle for students to land on an idea, or were there perhaps like too many ideas and they just had to filter through these to find the ones that were really going to land and work on?
For the student's perspective, I believe that there are many ideas on the net, right, that you could potentially find, especially given that usually Forbes will actually present the top tech trends of 2024. But during this hackathon, it was more on context. So there was a very great deal of scoping of those ideas and potentially try to filter out a bunch of ideas that could make sense for the problem statement. And so because of the intentionality that is behind creating a problem statement and crafting it and scoping it for the students, I think that was easier for them to, firstly, find opportunities within the track that they represented or the space that they represented. So I guess in terms of how the hackathon was run, I think it provided students with something like a guiding hand towards the path of gathering new knowledge based on context. At the same time, we also talked about how hackathons provide confidence for our teams. So that I think confidence is a big part for startup culture, because you have industry leaders giving you affirmation as well as support in terms of your ideas. And that culminates as a very good incubator, in a sense, where teams have the confidence to move on to the next stage and see their project more than just a simple hackathon idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you so much. To turn back again to Tehan, I would like to follow up with the question of what are some of the interesting projects that we've seen coming out of the hackathons in previous years, maybe discussing the differences between this year's hackathon and last year's hackathon, and potentially some of the challenges that you see students facing in terms of commercializing their projects after these even successes amongst the winning teams.
I was here for last year's hackathon, so perhaps I could talk about last year's hackathon a little bit more. I think last year's hackathon was a little bit more in a private setting. So we held it in school, we had one platinum sponsor. It was still an enriching experience. However, there was not much public interaction. For this year's hackathon, we decided to expand it four times. So we had four times the number of platinum sponsors. We had a collaboration together with and co-organized it with AIDF, Asian Institute of Digital Finance. And we were able to take our finals to Suntec City. That brought in the general public to come over to spectate those presentations, as well as potentially network with the participants as well as the judges. So that was the main difference between this year's hackathon and last year's hackathon. Because there was such, we kind of engaged and brought in the public, it set a more formal stage for the participants to be able to present their ideas and be able to kind of network with, for example, I knew there were NTU professors that came down as well. And so there was a very good opportunity for them to engage with other academic institutions, and it potentially created more conversations. And that's what we want in the fintech ecosystem, right? We want more conversations and more understanding between the general populace. That's going to expand our ecosystem in that light.
Cool. And maybe that's a good kind of recap of the differences between perhaps, you know, this year and last year, the fact that it's a little bit more public facing, the fact that you have more different perspectives coming in from industry this way. Can you maybe share a little bit about the challenges or the incentives that perhaps limit the top teams from carrying on their ideas further?
It's actually a very hard question. I think many top teams also face these same problems again and again, which is perhaps confidence, as well as a step to take it further, as well as believing in their idea. I think that's something that's very important in the startup culture. At the same time, I think more could be done to potentially help these students to break into industries.
To build on this theme of the challenges that the students have in terms of the confidence or faith in their ideas, I'd like to turn to Han Wai and ask, from your guys' perspective, both in terms of perhaps the student-led teams commercializing their ideas, or just your understanding of the kind of valley of death of people trying to create startups, what are some of the biggest challenges that people might not know about, or the ways that they are able to ameliorate these challenges and make it to the kind of stage, hopefully, that you of success that your team has managed to garner?
I definitely second what Tehan said. The confidence factor is a huge part of it. On the other hand, what we do see is the opportunity cost. The opportunity cost of running a startup is to enter into a very big graduate program run by banks, run by fintech unicorns, etc. And that's a very huge opportunity cost, isn't it? Someone that enter a graduate program could easily earn upwards of $6,000 as a starting pay rate. Jumping into the startup space is a very uncertain, at the same time very rewarding process. And I would say most people are not comfortable with that. And on top of that, there are other alternatives as well, right? You do not need to start a startup by yourself. You could enter incubator, there's accelerator programs and whatnot. These opportunities are not as well marketed as compared to a graduate program. If you're not in startup, you might not even know what a accelerator program or incubator is. And that's where the challenges lie. On top of that, even if you don't enter a incubator program or accelerator, where do you get help to then develop your startup? So the support ecosystem is another, I would say, development area that is not as well marketed. If I understand correctly, there is an NUS enterprise that offers such support to students, to younger startups that is created by NUS students. And I think these are very good opportunities, which I feel can be marketed better in the sense that to allow more students to get exposure to that. And that in turn would help them with the confidence issue that Tehan mentioned earlier.
Actually, I think something else to add on. One of the most important factors as a student would be funding, right? Because when, let's say you're year two, year three, you probably would have done a few internships and you wouldn't have much capital to be able to sustain, for example, the life cycle of a startup. At the same time, there are many management criterions that you probably have to think about, which is manpower or hiring. And that, of course, we have outsource options. We can potentially get a wider net of developers from all around the globe. But then access to those materials or those resources could be limited as well. And so, which is why there could be a huge opportunity cost for graduating students to take on that leap of faith and go on to start kind of realizing their startups.
Yeah. I want to jump in here as, again. I think Tehan has, this is a great point that Tehan actually mentioned. The access, I think in this day and age is with especially AI and, you know, all sorts of programs running about, access to programs is a smaller issue now. Knowing that you have access to this issue is the key, right? Because sometimes you might be just too caught up with a certain route, like maybe getting internships, etc. You might not be made aware of like other routes that are around you.
I think, yeah, this idea of the potential barrier to entry of commercializing your ideas, of, you know, you're giving up, well, good paying jobs, stable jobs at banks, graduate programs, and the lack of support from potentially incubators or accelerators, or both mentorship and funding support to nurture these projects forward, I think are definitely great points that hopefully us at the NUS FinTech Lab will help to try to slowly bridge over time in terms of our support of the potential startups within that are developing within our own space, but of course with the help of our industry, you know, led expertise as well. Well, is something that we're very much appreciative of. To close off our conversation, I'd like to turn to Elf and ask if you have any last-minute pieces of advice you would give to any graduate students or undergraduate students who are looking to accelerate their career in the fintech space, anything we didn't discuss that you think is perhaps under-discussed that you think is particularly important.
Sure, definitely. This is kind of related to my previous point. We live in a world right now where students who already have two internships done before they graduate. And it's quite scary because during the last NUS FinTech Summit Demo Day and Career Day, we are still receiving people who wants to do a third internship. And that's really scary because then now, instead of having an education inflation, now you have an internship inflation, right? And that's where the meme of like having 10 years experience to get entry level job become really scary, and because it's real. That's the reality that we're living in. So students in general need to find creative ways to get noticed besides grades and internships. One of the best way that I think students can do is to provide value to the ecosystem and the community in general. Of course, you need to be good in your fundamental skills, being coding, marketing, or even technical analysis, etc. Other ways that you can get yourself noticed is to volunteer in the ecosystem or the community, like for example what Tehan is doing, right? Volunteer to be part of panels, volunteer to be moderating panels, volunteering to create content for societies, etc. And that's where you get a bit of your name out to do a bit more personal branding. And that's where these are creative ways you can get noticed beyond just grades and internships. Because you are then providing value to your ecosystem. And from there, people start to notice you. In short, value creation, right? So that you can elevate your status within the community itself. And within ELF, we have this program called the Student Ambassador Program that provides such opportunities for students to, in a way, contribute back to the fintech and blockchain ecosystem. And of course, with that, we would help, we would love to give, bring them exposure by bringing them into industry events, giving them opportunities to get connected with the broader blockchain and fintech ecosystem.
There's this point of kind of the creative ways of getting noticed to get around the internship and even grade inflation, I think is something that definitely is under-discussed. I haven't heard any other people discuss it, but it's very relevant. I think I'll give the last word to Tehan here. Given your presence in the fintech society, what do you feel are the best ways that you or the society have tried to give students the opportunities to accelerate their careers into the fintech ecosystem, perhaps in these creative means of expression and marketing themselves?
So maybe I can start off with perhaps what to actually do when you're just starting out and you probably don't really know about the space, but you would want to break into the space. So the first one is join student clubs. I think that's very important in terms of meeting like-minded individuals that will prime you to start researching on topics. And there are many resources out there online. And so students will be able to utilize these resources and potentially do a deep dive on them. The second thing is, I think it has been talked about so much during this podcast, which is internships. I think everyone would yearn for an internship so that they will get industry experiences. There is a never-ending repository of things to learn, right? So it's very unfortunate because of how I would say it's unfortunate and fortunate at the same time because of how dynamic tech is right now. In NUS Fintech Society's light, we'd like to talk about the projects that we have kind of initiated in the respective departments so that we are able to provide a secondary enrichment to the curriculum that has really been provided by NUS.
What different departments do you guys have?
So we have the Quant department, we have ML, the Machine Learning department, the Blockchain department, as well as the Software Development department. And every semester, we usually do scrums so that we can kind of propose projects as well as work on those projects. And we usually organize like a cohesion at the end of the semester to present those respective projects that we have come up with. And so that adds a certain sense of a little bit of flavor for student life in a sense where you can work on a project that could be led by your seniors in which they will impart some information as well as knowledge to you. And yes, so I think that comes full circle, right? So join student clubs to be able to break into the space, be able to be part of the fintech ecosystem.
Excellent.
So let me add in on that. That's really interesting. So definitely second what Tehan said on the student club side of things. And the reason is this, especially when he mentioned about the knowledge sharing portion of it, in the world of fintech and blockchain, so much things is going at such an accelerated pace. If you want to follow every single news that comes your way, you will get burned out really, really fast. So having that knowledge sharing group actually is very helpful. And within ELF, we have that weekly knowledge sharing session where each department will share something that they are personally interested in. So that reduces the effort, the overall effort doing personal research. The added bonus is that you get perspective from different lenses. So for example, you get perspective from tech, you get perspective from the investment teams, you get perspective from the business teams, etc. So similarly in the student group, you get perspective from different students who are looking at different lenses. So with that, the knowledge that you accrue becomes much faster and much more well-diversed. And that's really the value of, you know, knowledge sharing within a community such as fintech society.
Thank you so much for this great insight. I want to kind of give another plug for ELF's both student ambassador program and their kind of both with internally their weekly knowledge sharing projects and fintech societies. And I hope wherever you guys are listening in from, you're able to also find your own communities to do this kind of knowledge sharing to not get burned out from the endless stream of news. to just wrap up our session, I think it was very enlightening to kind of get both sides of the perspectives. Perhaps we could give a last word to first Tehan and then Han Y of any final pieces of advice you would give to our listeners, to any students, to any companies trying to recruit these students, anything on your mind you'd like to share with our audience.
So the first thing is, I think finding your community is so important. Finding your group of friends, finding a work group, as well as finding clubs that suit you. In terms of, like Han Y mentioned, there's an endless stream of information that we probably have to master to be able to create something new in the fintech ecosystem. And so having your friend group, having a work group, will allow you to be able to engage in some collective thought, right? So you're decreasing the amount of work that you have to do, but you're increasing the amount of output that you can potentially produce. And so joining hackathons together with your friend groups, or joining hackathons together with your community groups, are a good way of exercising that kind of that thought muscle. You'll be able to think collectively and potentially be able to create something that is greater than the team itself. Yeah.
Excellent. It's collaborative spirit and kind of lighting it on fire by some hands-on experience. And Han Y?
For the students listening, right now you're in the best space possible to experiment, to learn, to be as fearless as possible. So do take as much opportunities you see, be it within NUS FinTech Society, within NUS in general, or even out in the world. I think now is the best time, because maybe I'm speaking from a place of privilege, but now is the best time because you don't have any bills to pay. I mean, aside from a phone bill, aside from maybe hostel fee, etc. This is really the best time. Go all out, go all in, have fun.
Well, thank you so much, Tehan and Han Y, for sharing your perspectives and experiences with us and our audience. Your contributions definitely highlight the collaborative spirit that's essential for the Singapore's growing fintech ecosystem. To our audience members, we hope that this session has inspired you and helps you explore and engage with the fintech community yourself, whether it be as innovators, entrepreneurs, or supporting our growing student-led projects over time. Until our next session, keep pushing the boundaries and exploring the vast opportunities in fintech.